This is Small Change on Radio Adelaide. Thanks for joining us. Second Chances SA is a not-for-profit volunteer organisation which provides help and support to people leaving prison and the people around them. At the end of last year, the organisation received an award for its work with prisoners' children and their families. CEO Helen Glanville and Prisoners' Kids Community Advocate Chris Bowman join us live in studio. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you for coming in. So tell us a little bit about the award. Who wants to start?
Well, very exciting. I flew to Canberra and they paid me for it. So I picked up the gold, shall we say. It's not very often that an NGO in South Australia actually wins a gold award in the community arena for crime prevention. The correct title is the Australian
Crime and Violence Prevention Award.
Yes, I have to get that V, violence, in there, and Crime Prevention Award. And the award was for prisoners' kids, the invisible victims of crime.
So tell us a little bit about what you were doing with the kids that made the people making the award think that this was such a good effort.
Well, just like hospitals, our prisons are filling up to overflowing because not enough is being put into early prevention.
Oh, ain't that so?
Yeah. So we had some independent research done on what we were doing. We've been in this space for 9 years. We were with another national organisation, but we decoupled. I love that word. And we decoupled and became our own exclusive little South Australian charity, and we're celebrating our third anniversary on the 1st of February.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So we specialise in reaching the families, in particular the children of prisoners, because the research is all there, which says that they are 7 times more likely to go to prison than any other group in the community. So we have referrals from imprisoned parents.
So before we jump on from there,
yes,
let's just dig into that for a second. So what you're saying is that if I happen to grow up in a family where my mum or my dad is imprisoned, it's 7 times more likely that I myself am going to end up in prison.
Yes, because in some postcodes it's a badge of honour, and because of the values that they're not taught. So average Australian middle class think that every other parent's telling their children to tell the truth. And in some of our families, they're teaching their children how to shoplift. So values such as respect for authority and honesty and trust and integrity, all those sorts of values that we like and we think is about character development and building good citizens who then become tax-paying citizens, it doesn't necessarily happen in this cohort. And so it's the associates of mum and dad. So you probably know that 80% of all crime is drug and alcohol related. Mm-hmm. And so therefore in that subculture we have children growing up and watching and listening and hearing, and so they're...
And suffering.
Indeed, and it's not their fault.
Mm. So, Chris, tell me a little bit about the role that you play in the organisation and the role that you played in delivering this program, I think.
So my role within the organisation is Prisoners Kids Community Advocate. And that's finding opportunities, like we are on this show today, in helping educate the community about what it's like to be a child of a prisoner, especially, and what kind of life outcomes that creates. And also just educating the community that, you know, there are real people dealing with these issues, and they're not necessarily bad people. They're probably not really any different from you or me, but their life circumstances are certainly different. And I think as a society and as a community, there are things that we can do to address kind of some of those issues.
So what are some of the things that you're doing, particularly with the kids, to try and help them develop a stronger sense of themselves and a stronger sense of resilience in the context of, you know, they might not be surrounded by the best role models in that context?
Yeah, definitely.
What are some of the things that you would be trying to impart to them to make sure that they're setting themselves on a different path, if you like?
Yeah, so one of our key programs in that area are called PK, or Prisoners Kids Mentoring Camps. So last year we ran 10 of those. And so that's creating spaces, usually over a weekend, where we take kids out, usually in smaller groups. If they're teenagers, it's usually between, you know, 6 to 8 people. And if it's primary school age, it's, you know, anywhere up to 20. But really giving them a weekend where there is a low ratio of leaders to children, so that they can have a chance to have some really positive role models over that weekend. And also have those kind of conversations where it's asking them, you know, what do you want to do with your life? And what are some things you can start doing today to get there? Because just those conversations alone are not necessarily conversations that anyone else is having with them. And just taking those opportunities as well to really encourage the kids and the teenagers, and to really speak positive words into their lives as well.
So what are some of the most difficult parts of those conversations from your perspective?
That's a really good question. I would say that some of the most difficult parts, there's, you know, over a weekend or over the time that we necessarily get with children of prisoners, you're trying to combat maybe a lot of negative words and a lot of negative thoughts that have been spoken into their lives, or maybe that they've kind of placed on themselves, taking on some of the blame of their situation. So I think just the scope of what you're trying to tackle in those bursts of time, that's probably the greatest challenge.
How comfortable, I can't imagine if I'm a kid that I'm all that comfortable with the idea of fessing up to anybody that my mum or my dad might be in prison. How difficult is that for kids, and what does that do when they're trying to get along to the local school, and some of the, you know, what do other kids do to you when they find out that stuff? Do you hear that story?
Yeah, we do hear that story. So we've got what's called the PK Family Care, which is a team that are part of Second Chances SA, and they're trained as, I guess, social workers, and so we've got two of them based in the north. And they kind of do the follow-up after these camps and also find out where we can provide other support services or where we can do other referrals. So that's where we hear a lot of the stories as well of what is daily life like for these kids. And a lot of them, yeah, it's not something that they want to share. It's not something that their teachers may even be aware of. And in some cases, they've just been left to kind of carry that burden alone. Do you have any addition to that, Helen?
Well, it's called stigma.
Mm.
And so they often get bullied or teased because your old man's in Yatala. And so consequently, my role is to bring in the resources so that we can take them shopping for brand new school uniforms and shoes to restore their dignity, that they can make good choices. They can make choices and have a vision for their own life, which will lead towards a goal and a vision that says, I can become a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. And so if they're fortunate enough to come on one of our 10 camps where we mentor them, they then beg to come back again, because in the richness of the context, they know that every other child there also has a parent in prison, and so they're equal. And so they feel comfortable and safe. When we visit the homes, sometimes it's the sense of smell that our workers are attuned to, which is not really even in some cases safe, and we hear things and we know things that are very, very, very sad, and it's just not their fault. So we're dedicated to this particular group and only this particular group because no one else is. Not just the only reason, but we know if we get in early enough, we can divert them from detention.
How, because this is one of those circumstances where the kids are one part of the puzzle and, of course, are at the receiving end of whatever circumstances are being dealt to them. But on the other hand, their parents are a very important part of the puzzle. How much of your work actually ends up having to be focused on working with parents to become the best parents they can be?
Well, we can't reach the children unless we go through the caregiver. So we get permission or requested by the imprisoned parent to then go and visit. So firstly, we have to impress upon the caregiver that we're not the government and that we're their friend and that we're there for their child. And when they feel comfortable with that, or their children, when they feel comfortable, then they want more. Oh, so you can help us with this, can you? Or you can help us with that. And, of course, it's about social inclusion and making sure that, too, we might give them some socialisation opportunities. Maybe we'll hook them up to the local recreation centre. Maybe there's a good youth group that they might like to go to. And, of course, the challenge for us is to sit down and plan, and with the caregiver, what are your goals, especially in relation to school? Because if the caregiver, mum or grandma, isn't helping them to keep their eyes on doing school and doing it well, that's the beginning when truanting can commence, and truanting starts, and we have a snowball effect into a negative, possibly meaningless lifestyle, which can be quite destructive for them and the community.
So do your staff connect with the education system in that context? And is the education system good at connecting with you to try and, where they know that someone's involved, to try and kind of help leverage that?
Well, I'm very pleased to be able to say to you that 12 months ago, 60 wellbeing officers were notified of our existence, and we're called in on some cases to work together. And that's what we like. So when we have a phone call about a particular family, oh, we've heard that you've been working with this particular family, I said, well, we're in the business of sharing. There's no silos with us, for the sake of the child. And so we, in fact, like to do a home visit with a wellbeing officer so that they too can see what we're seeing.
Occasionally you must leave the day feeling a little exhausted. What enables both of you, maybe one at a time, Chris, we'll start with you, what is it that kind of allows you to go home and pep up and get ready for turning up tomorrow with just as much enthusiasm and just as much vigour about the importance of your job?
Yeah, I guess for me, something that comes to mind is that there's a lot of people you end up talking to that you might not be able to help, or that, you know, may not be ready to help themselves, is more to it. But I guess what gives me that glimmer of hope is when I have those interactions, say with a prisoner that's come out of jail and is looking to maybe connect their property that we've been holding on to for them, and they come to us kind of thinking that surely, you know, we couldn't trust this organisation, surely they've kind of, you know, stolen it or something, and we have that 2-minute exchange where they see that they can trust us and that we're actually out there to make life better for them and to be someone who champions them. And in that change, that quick change in demeanour for me, is what makes it all worth it. And whether that's with a prisoner or whether that's with their family, where they suddenly see that, you know, there is someone out there who cares about them and who wants to see them have the best life outcomes possible. Even if that's just a small moment in the day, that's what makes it for me.
Helen, what about for you?
I get a buzz when I see, over the years, the children growing up and actually wanting to become leaders on our PK camp. Mm. That is the best thing ever. And so now we have another group of kids coming through saying, I want to be like Montana. And Montana, for example, is the first one in her entire family who's ever finished year 12 and then gone on to university.
Oh, good on you, Montana.
And so we've got half a dozen leaders who have come through. They are the fruit, you might like to say, of having... We've invested in their lives. We've come alongside them from all sorts of angles, because the package, the holistic package, includes saying to them that they are accepted, they belong, and they have value. So we do that through birthday presents. We do that through Christmas presents, and they're brand new. They're very specific to who they are, because most of these kids actually feel a sense of false guilt. They actually feel maybe it was their fault that daddy or mummy's gone to prison, and they often feel that perhaps...
Kids often do.
Yeah, and they feel that maybe daddy doesn't love me anymore. And so we are saying to them, in these big gaps between the time they are separated, that sense of abandonment goes very deep. And so we're saying to them and to their caregiver that they are accepted, they belong, and they have value.
Helen, how'd you get involved? Why'd you start doing this stuff?
I've been in this arena for a very long time. In New South Wales, before we came here, and in South Australia, there's another organisation, so 30-odd years. It's quite simple. I just married a Crim.
So what did that mean?
That meant stigma. That meant rejection. That meant, you know, what did you do that for? Because he'll ruin your life. We eloped. We married in prison. But we had a sense of wanting to help others who had been through that whole thing, because having a sentence shouldn't be a life sentence. You do the crime, you do the time, yes. But when you come out, we, the community, should be celebrating or clapping them for having done it, but also give them every possible opportunity to become taxpaying citizens. So my husband had an extremely strong sense of empathy and understanding and compassion, and he still does to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of rolled along and grown, and here we are.
It's a fantastic story, and I guess there's nothing like the personal to actually change one's life. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is that so many of people who would be maybe listening to this broadcast may never have met in an obvious and open way someone who's been to prison.
Mm.
And so in practice, everybody has an imagination about what it means to be someone that's been in prison, or what that means for the future. And indeed, we would absolutely echo the idea that we ought to have people where we are imprisoning people. Mm. We ought to be sending them out better than they were when they went in.
Better, not bitter.
Mm.
And
that's
of course,
right.
You know, what I know at the moment is that we haven't quite got that mixture right. And I noticed with some interest this week there's been a couple of announcements from the Labor Party around, you know, focusing on the issue of recidivism, focusing on the issues of home detention. And we would hope that those kinds of initiatives actually are the kinds of things that might help people to actually emerge from having taken some responsibility, having fulfilled their obligations, to actually emerge better in that context.
You can't help anyone unless they really want to change. And so our first value, it's an old-fashioned one, but it's tough love. And quite frankly, if you don't want to change, then we seriously can't help you. But with children, we can get in there early. And I think that that's really why we've probably won that award. But also, I believe we're the only ones doing early intervention in the nation. And I sat down with the Attorney General last October 2016, and I said, this state can be the leading light of the nation if you invest in this area, because the community is quite concerned about children going into detention, because the moment they go in there, they're associating, you know, and then, of course, you move on and progress into prison. It's like the University of Crime. That's where you can really learn some good tricks. So it's very important that we understand it's a complex issue, but when someone is returned into the community, the last thing they need is rejection. If they're wanting to change, then we're there to help them.
So we've been chatting to Helen Glanville and Chris Bowman from Kids, where are you from?
Second Chances SA.
Yeah.
And we make sure the SA is on the end.
Nothing
I'll give you a second chance.
Yeah, cheers. I'm so pleased. So lucky too. Thank you so much. Hey, before you go, just a really quick opportunity to advert. Of course, this stuff doesn't get done for nothing. If people want to provide support to Second Chances SA, what can they do that would actually be helpful?
Well, Chris here has helped design the donate page, and we have projects that need funding, like the camps, for example, and they don't happen at... they're not cheap. So we do rely on donations. We don't get government funding for those, or birthday presents or Christmas presents. We do rely on trusts and foundations and so forth. But we have been successful in receiving funding through a little bit of lobbying on my part through to June 2019 for the two staff, the two professionals. And I've actually just given my first financial report into DCSI today. So I'm quite grateful. It wasn't exactly what I asked for. I'm going to put runs on the board so that they're going to invest more after June 2019 because it's a serious area that needs some serious dollars and committed people. So for our first quarter of operation, we didn't get, we weren't even able to start till October because the funds came in quite late, but we've made 126 home visits. And we've bought school uniforms and shoes, and we're actually really thrashing those corporate credit cards to take the child to a shoe fitting and a uniform shop today. Both our girls are out there making it all come together.
Fantastic. So if you're interested in supporting Second Chances, you'd need to go to their website, which is secondchances.org.au, and we'll put all of those things up afterwards with the podcast, won't we, Lisa?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, guys, again for coming into the studio and having a chat with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Lovely.
You're listening to Small Change. Stay tuned. We'll have more after this.